Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Christmas time is here, by golly, disapproval would be folly. Deck the halls with hunks of holly, fill the cup and don't say when. Kill the turkeys, ducks, and chickens. Mix the punch, drag out the dickens. Even though the prospect sickens, brother, here we go again. On Christmas Day, you can't get sore. Your fellow man you must adore. There's time to rob him all the more. The other 360 of war. Sparing no expense, send some useless old utensil or a matching pen and pencil. Just the thing I need. How nice. It doesn't matter how sincere it is, nor how heartfelt the spirit. Sentiment will not endear it. What's important is the price. Hark, the Herald Tribune sings, advertising wondrous things. God rest ye merry merchants, may ye make the yuletide pay. Angels we have heard on high tell us to go out and buy. Let the raucous sleigh bell jingle, hail our dear old friend Kris Kringle, driving his reindeer across the sky. Don't stand underneath when they fly by.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a kolachki's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. He's seriously, strenuously, and severely green, and it gives him a headache every week. Here he is, Mike Novak.
In the main, right.
Don't mind me, I'm just trying to get the headset cable from under the wheels of this cart. And have you noticed that at the holidays here on our town with all those folks and Mike Sanders, that as they get closer to the holidays, more and more of them show up. And there they are, and they're all in the studio at the same time. And then as we get closer to the holidays, more and more people abandon me. They just disappear into the woodwork and into the ether. No Sarah Batka today. I got blown off for a wedding. It's not even a holiday. It's a wedding? Really? Does anybody do that anymore?
These things happen.
I guess. Fine. That's just fine. And then next week, are you going to be here?
No.
Right.
Neither. Well, my family, just like my family celebrates Christmas on unusual days, my family, or Thanksgiving on unusual days, mm-hmm. my family does Christmas differently too, so that nobody has to, you know, haul kids out of the house on Christmas morning when they'd much rather be playing with the fun new things they just got than getting dressed and going to grandma's house. So we're doing Christmas with my family on Sunday, the 23rd.
Bah, humbug.
But it's a fun cousin's day. There'll be 10 kids and as many grown-ups, and we just kind of hang out and play games and, you know, family stuff.
Sounds like fun.
It is.
And it Not even on the holiday. Even better. Your family's really weird. You know that.
I do know that.
No. Oh, and this and my my alarm is going off, telling me that my show is on. How about that?
Your alarm's a few seconds late there.
I know. It's been actually, it's been going off for the last hour. It just reminds me, you got a show coming up. And on this show, even without Sarah Batka, oh, and I, of course, I left my coffee. Denny, coffee's in the production room. And do you got that CD by any chance? Are you tracking that down?
We do not have CDs in this building.
There's no CDs in the building.
Yeah, Mike Novak DVD, because we got DVD.
We have no CDs in this building.
No CDs. We had
CDs. I got a whole playlist of songs. I started to burn. I brought a CD from home, put it in the computer, started it. Something malfunctioned. So I said, well, this CD is occupied, so you need a fresh CD. We have no CDs in the building. This is a...
But I'll keep looking.
How about a thumb drive? Can a thumb drive work?
I got no place to plug it in here.
Oh.
Yeah, maybe I do.
Oh, indeed.
I don't know. Who cares? on the show today, more books. Actually, we'll get to that in a second, because we have more books that we think you would like to give as gifts. We did some of those last week, and we had a wonderful time interviewing various authors. We had four authors on the program last week, and that was fun. So we've got three more today. But before, I don't even have my dinger here. I don't have the box. I got nothing. I am
wow. Sarah
so,
leaves you, and things just crumble.
They just crumble.
Sarah, we're missing you.
Yeah. But she's not the one that gets the dinger anyway. No, off the shelf.
Can
I
go find your dinger for you?
Yeah, you know where the big box is?
I sure do.
Okay.
On it.
You go get the big box. So Lisa Albrecht will take care of that. We got to have that. And what I will tell you is we will get to those wonderful books, and there are some great ones that we've tracked down again for this Sunday. But good news, well, I guess good news, encouraging news on the environmental front, which will start the 10 o'clock hour on this show. This past Wednesday, 12-12-12, so mark that down in your calendars. On 12-12-12, the Sierra Club, Prairie Rivers Network, and Openlands filed a complaint in circuit court in Springfield, Illinois, demanding judicial review of that open pit frack sand mine that is proposed outside of Starved Rock State Park. And they're taking it to the Illinois Department of Natural Resources and a bunch of folks and saying, no, we don't think you should be doing this because you didn't get it right. That you didn't do due diligence on this matter. And we will talk to Cindy Skrukrud from the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club, who will be on the show in the 10 o'clock hour to talk about that lawsuit and what that means for this issue, which I have, you know, this is the anniversary, basically, of when I first started covering this, because it's the anniversary of the vote in LaSalle County when the Board of Zoning Appeals approved. Thank you for the coffee. Appreciate it, Denny. I'll give you a ding for that. There we go. And thank you for the bell, Lisa. A year ago, they approved the special use permit to allow Mississippi Sand LLC establish its operations just outside the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park. So in the 10 o'clock hour, we will talk about the lawsuit now filed against IDNR and others and what that means for this story. I can tell you one thing it means. Probably, I don't know for sure, probably means the story's going to go on longer than we thought, which is probably a good thing. While we have a chance to look at that, the idea of that thing there and whether it should be. And of course, you know, my position on it is that it should not. So
I just think it's exciting that there's a little room to breathe and hopefully do a little more.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing. Cause it had been moving like a steamroller
Let's put some reason and some sanity into the
In fact, that's the complaint that the owner of the business, Mississippi Sandy, says, well, it's probably going to put it off for another year. And then he says, well, you know, those jobs won't be there, all 39 of them, or whatever it is, plus the truck guys, which, boy, we're, is this thing still...
Hey, your show's starting 12 minutes ago.
Oh, there it goes. There's the alarm. Oh, good. My show started at 12. Thank you for letting me know about that. All right. So that comes up in the second hour. But on the first hour, let's get right to it. I got a book, which is here somewhere in the bag. In the bag of goodies, and you really need to look at this, Lisa. This is beautiful, beautiful book called On Arctic Ground, Tracking Time Through Alaska's National Petroleum Reserve. Now, doesn't that sound odd? I mean, the idea of let's go up to the petroleum reserve and take pictures. And then what you get? Well, you get beautiful vistas and water buffalo and caribou and things like that, bears. And unlike Stephen Colbert, I like bears. Let us go to the phone and bring in the author of this book, Debbie S. Miller. Debbie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I asked you first.
I'm doing great. I'm just drinking my coffee and I'm waking up here. I'm actually... on the Richardson Bay near San Francisco. It's a foggy morning and doing quite well.
You know, it's kind of that way here in the Chicago today. It's kind of cool and overcast, and I don't know if it's actually foggy, but it might be at some places. I think people who hear about the name of this book, as I just alluded to, are going to be confused. Because they're going to say, well, why would somebody go up to Alaska and take pictures of an oil field? Not exactly what you did, is it?
No, it's not at all. And it is. The name really disguises the true character of the largest tract of public land we have remaining in the United States. This area that I explored is about the size of Maine. It's big enough to hold 10 Yellowstone National Parks. So we're talking about the largest really frontier landscape remaining in our country that was designated as a petroleum reserve back in 1923. So this was a long time ago they put this name on the map.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were just coming out of World War One, and President Warren Harding wanted to have an emergency supply of oil for the Navy in case we had another war. So he drew this big boundary line around the northwest corner of Alaska, which is all in the Arctic. It's an extraordinary area. But frankly, when I first went there on the first expedition into this area in 2009, I wasn't quite sure what to expect, because the name it conveys storage tanks and pipelines,
right?
You know, and oil pads. And the truth of the matter is there has been some drilling in limited areas in the reserve, but only exploratory, and there are no roads. It's all wilderness, and this is pristine wilderness. It's untrammeled, spectacular vistas.
And I'm looking at the wildlife, just an incredible
amount of wildlife there.
Right. I was just going to say, I'm looking at this map, which is inside the book. And it lists the areas where you have wildlife, such as caribou concentrated calving area, and they're huge swaths. Marine mammal haulout area, walrus,
right.
which is a walrus and spotted seal. There's polar bear denning and feeding areas. There's raptor nesting. What kind of raptors are we going to see there?
Well, you know, one that you can relate to in the Chicago area is the rough-legged hawk. Because you have rough-legged hawks around Chicago during the winter months, and we have one of the largest concentrations of breeding rough-legged hawks along the Colville River and the Etivalik River, where I paddled down in a canoe for about close to 400 miles down this wild river corridor. We didn't see anybody. In a three-week period, we saw no other humans, and we saw a lot of rough-legged hawks. that were nesting on these high cliffs and outcroppings above the Colville River herd them every day. And they're only there in the summer during the breeding time, and then they come down and they winter in your area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bird that we have in common. You know, we have a lot of birds in the reserve, many species of shorebirds, waterfowl, songbirds that come from six different continents. They come to breed, to nest, to molt their feathers in the reserve, and then they leave. And they go to, you know, to point south, many into the central part of the United States. Birds like the Lapland longspur, we get hundreds of thousands of them on the tundra. Birds like the snowy owl that sometimes you see around the Great Lakes in the winter months. These birds we see in the Arctic in the summer.
You're trying to draw us into this, aren't you, Debbie? It's,
well,
you know,
make that
connection to Chicago. And
well, yeah.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that. Because the question I would have to ask, if you see, you know, you see these incredible photographs, and who took the photographs, by the way?
Well, this was an amazing opportunity for me that, in addition to hiking and paddling across this landscape, I got to travel with outstanding photographers. More than, I think we had 13 photographers all total that contributed stunning photographs for the book project. And I also traveled with a cultural anthropologist, a fellow named Richard Nelson, a colleague and great friend, and he lives up, was in Sitka, but grew up in Madison, Wisconsin. And so he produced a soundscape that goes with the book, which is quite nice so that you can actually hear the sounds of this land, the caribou and their clicking hooves and hearing them on their procession.
Yeah, we were hoping to get some of that, and I guess we just didn't have the opportunity to get the sound. I would love to have played that, and maybe I will in some future show.
But if you open your email, there should be a couple on there that you could just pull up that are MP3 files.
From
that I sent you an email with a couple of sound clips, so you might be able to pull those up.
If my computer were actually attached to the system here, and I might be able to do that. So we'll see what we can do here. Maybe it can happen.
Maybe we can have some magic.
That's right. Little audio magic, and I'm just pulling cords, and they're going nowhere here.
Yeah, the sounds of this place are quite remarkable, and I've been giving, I gave about 32 programs over the course of the last 6 months about the reserve, introducing the public to one of the most amazing places we have remaining in our country. I mean, this is our American heritage, this place. This is the remnant patch of frontier that we think of when we are first thinking of America before we, you know, settled it and built all our roads and freeways. You hear things there in a different way because there's no sound of industrialization, not even the sound of airplanes flying over your head because you're off the grid for where jets fly. So this is a true type of quiet and peace where you hear every little sound, every little songbird, every little, you know, rustle of leaf. And so that the sounds were very special.
I imagine. Yeah. Well, and as you said, there's no roads. It's just amazing that we still have an area like this. And so I noticed that, in one of the things you write about in the book is how within this area, which is again called the, Alaska's National Petroleum Reserve, there are special areas, being designated. What kind of, protection does a special area have?
Oh, yeah, this is very exciting. It's a great question. While this place has been on the map since 1923, just in this past year, the Department of Interior, through the Bureau of Land Management, they're charged with governing and managing this area. And they've just come up with a comprehensive management plan for the whole area. And this new plan it's very exciting because under the new plan, there is a conservation alternative that would protect about 11 million acres, would be not available for oil and gas leasing because of their special values for wildlife, for wilderness, for the cultural history of the area is phenomenal. The use by the native people for their subsistence hunting and fishing. So they've put aside these five special areas that under the new plan would be protected, and there would be no oil and gas leasing allowed on those lands. This is a great first step. It's not permanent because any administration could change this plan in the future, but this is the first time that an administration has looked at the area as a whole and said, wait a minute, we don't need to drill, baby, drill every single acre. We need to protect the areas that are most valuable for the wildlife and for the human uses of the area. For example, you mentioned the caribou. We have the largest herd in our country lives in this area. It has a range that's the size of Montana. It's hard to fathom a herd that numbers 350,000 animals. And when they give birth, which I've been out on the tundra, you know, watching this, when they give birth in June over a 7 to 10 day period, when I was there on my last trip, there were 150,000 calves born in one place.
Wow.
You know, it's a phenomenal amount of life. And watching them cross rivers and you know, tag side by side with their mothers, just an amazing place that we need to protect for future generations of these caribou and for, you know, our children and our grandchildren.
Yeah, I mean, and what's amazing about it is that pretty much nobody knows it's there. I mean, if folks have heard of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, but this place is west of that. And with its designation as a petroleum reserve, I imagine a lot of folks you must be finding in putting this book together that people are like me that just had no idea that this thing was here.
Oh, yes. That's the most of the comments I receive is, you know, why haven't I heard about this? You know, it is remote. You can't drive to it. It's in the Arctic. It took us 2.5 hours just to fly there from a little place called Coldfoot that's on the haul road that goes up to Prudhoe Bay. And in flying there, we flew over gates of the Arctic National Park, our northernmost national park. We flew across it to get there. So, you know, you are surrounded by some areas that are protected as a national park, the No Attack Preserve. But this area is so far away. And it is so vast, it's unfathomable, the dimension of space that I'm talking about, because you can see forever.
Yeah, that's the other thing. We have no conception of this. As you said, it's larger than the state of Maine. Imagine the state of Maine with not a single road.
Yes.
And you have to travel by river to get wherever you're going. It's kind of Lewis and Clark stuff, isn't it?
It is. We felt like Lewis and Clark out there. I had my journal. Every day I would make entries of what we were seeing, what we were feeling, whether it was wolves howling. As we're eating breakfast one morning, we were surrounded by wolves.
Yikes. You know, it's interesting. There's a controversy right now in the lower 48 where they're shooting wolves like nobody's business right outside of Yellowstone because the government in its infinite wisdom decided it was okay. And, of course, you know the way ranchers are. Give them a green light and they'll wipe out a species.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we do best. And, you know, it's just horrific. And it's, that's why we need areas like that so you could let the wolves do whatever they're supposed to do.
Exactly. And that's what when you're walking through this kind of a landscape, which, by the way, they have some of the oldest archaeological sites in North America are in this area. There's a place called the Mesa site that has 12, 13,000 years ago. People were living at this site. They were making tools out of chert, pounding them with their hands. And when you're walking on these ridges, sometimes, you know, we would find flakes and partial pieces of arrowheads that a human hand would have crafted these tools, you know, 12,000, 13,000 years ago. And these are the first people that came from Asia across the Bering Land Bridge that were living these nomadic, you know, lifestyles that were north of the Brooks Range in the Arctic. And so this place has a lot of cultural history. And people still use this area, coming in by boat, snow machines from the four Inupiaq Eskimo villages that are on the coast. They'll come up the rivers or they'll travel across the land on foot or by snow machine to go hunting, you know, fishing. And those traditions are still going on, which is pretty amazing to think that we have, you know, that kind of history in this remote area where people would have been living in a pretty tough, you know, world when you're above tree line having to, you know, survive 12 months out of the year when you're snow covered. 8 to 9 months out of the year, this area is snow covered and you've got temperatures that can get down to 40, 50, whatever, 60 below zero.
Well, we tried while we were doing this interview the best we could to get our technical staff here and find a way to get it off of my computer onto yours or onto the one here and play some of that audio. It ain't happening, is it, Denny?
No.
That's all right.
Cool. Life on the fly. But it's a beautiful book by Debbie S. Miller. And a bunch of other people, Jeff Fair, John R. Horner, Patrick S. Druckenmiller, Richard Nelson, Rosemary, how do you pronounce that?
Atugarek.
Atugarek. Photography by your whole staff, Patrick Endres, Hugh Rowe, Stephen Kozlowski, Florian Schultz, Subhankar Banerjee, Joel Sartor, I probably didn't pronounce that correctly, and more and more and more. This is a book that will surprise you if you pick it up, and the photography is stunning, and you're going to learn something you didn't know before. And that's what's really cool. It's called An Arctic Ground, Tracking Time Through Alaska's National Petroleum Reserve. If you want information about it, you can go to my website, mikenovak.net. I've got the link up there. Yes.
Yeah, Mike, I was just going to add that the one thing that's very special about this book project, the Pulitzer Braided River nonprofit, visionary publisher that believes in producing books about wild places that matter, that we need to protect. And so they're based in Seattle, Braided River, great, great publisher. And they teamed up with the Alaska Wilderness League, which is a conservation group that I'm a founding member of this group. That does fantastic work in protecting the wild special places of Alaska. So, you know, if people are interested in learning more about Alaska and our work to protect these areas like the National Petroleum Reserve, like the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, I would really encourage people to go online, visit the Alaska Wilderness League website, www.alaskawild.org, and the Braided River site, you know, if you're interested in learning more about the books about these wild places. It's been a wonderful opportunity to share this with people all across the country for the last 3 months. I've traveled to different states.
Yes, www.alaskawild.org if folks want more information about that. Debbie, it's been wonderful having you on the program. Congratulations on the book. I hope it sells well and a few people decide to pass it out as a holiday gift. I think it looks wonderful on your living room table.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. It was great to
and thanks for getting up early.
And have a happy holiday. And
you too. And I hope we talk in the future.
All right. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye bye now.
The Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Cool stuff. That's our first book of the day. Our next one, and I'll tell you, I am having all kinds of computer issues here this morning.
And I'm just watching helplessly because I'm not quite sure how I can help here.
Well, you saw me. I got sick of waiting for the thing to reboot. So I just ripped the battery out. I said, okay, emergency reboot. That's how you do it. That's how I learned to work with a computer. That's how you shut down a computer and start it up. You rip the battery out. No wonder it doesn't work very well. Come on!
Although the computers may not work, boy, the phones work fantastically. Our next guest is on the line.
Okay, cool. And we will get to our next guest. It's David B. Williams. And it's a subject kind of also unexpected. So we'll do that in just a second. Want to inspire your friends and relatives this holiday season? Here's how you do it. You give away all of your belongings and join a monastery. Or, and I bet you're counting on the or, give them a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The magazine is just packed with inspiration, from stories about great gardeners to tips about that perfect plant that you've been desperately seeking, to a little bit of know-how that somehow has eluded you until now. And there's something for everybody in the Chicagoland area. For instance, there are regional reports from southern Wisconsin, the Rockford area, the south suburbs, northwestern Indiana, and even southwestern Michigan. You'll also get the, and I guarantee it, the most complete calendar of garden events in the area. Then there's my column on the inside back page, the, and I guarantee it, the oddest collection of gardening thoughts ever put to paper. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town. This Christmas, get a subscription for a friend or even yourself. This is literally the gift that gives all year long. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com, ChicagolandGardening.com, or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at RiverNorthWellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Still hunting for the perfect gift for gardeners on your list? You need to take a trip to Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center on Dempster Street in Des Plaines. Lurvy is bursting with holiday cheer and everything you need to decorate both indoors and out this holiday season. Just yesterday, I tell you, they put all holiday decor on sale. And the way it works is that the more you buy, the more you save. You get $10 off a purchase of $50 or more. You get $25 off a purchase of $100 or more and $50 off a purchase of $175 or more. Of course, they have fresh cut wreaths, trees, containers, centerpieces, accents, poinsettias, and gifts for every gardener on your list. Don't forget to like them on Facebook, where this comment showed up just a few days ago, quote, "It's been a few years since I've come out of the country sticks to visit. I was like a kid in a candy store. So much product, so much awesome, professional, and helpful staff," end quote. And they're easy to get to, just a quarter mile east of the Tri-State Tollway, I-294 at 2550 East Dempster in Des Plaines. Go to Lurvy's, LURVEYS.com. See, you know my heritage, so you got to get a Christmas polka in there at some point. So, Lodz, you got run over by a reindeer.
I love your Christmas music selection.
If I could get to most of it, I can't get to most of it because my computer's frozen and I don't have the CDs and we can't do don't even get me started on it. All right, let's just go to the phone lines and bring in David B. Williams. He has written a book. If you thought the first book was a little off the beaten path, how about Cairns, Messengers in Stone? David, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mike, and yourself?
Well, technically, I got problems, but personally, I'm all right. I'm going to be really honest with folks here. I got sold on talking to you by your publicist, so you got to love your publicist.
I do.
You just have to just send her something for Christmas, send her some flowers or something. because, you know, when we were talking about Debbie S. Miller and the book we just talked about on Arctic Ground, and she said, I got this other book. This is really cool. This is this guy. And he went out and he studied cairns. And of course, you know what the first question is.
Why?
No, that's the second question.
Okay.
Why is the first, is the second question. First question is what? What's a cairn?
What is a cairn? Well, it's pretty simple. It's a pile of stone. And it's, people have been using these for thousands of years, piling them up as a way to get people to go certain places. They've used it as trail markers, as graveside markers, as territorial boundaries. And it's a pretty simple definition, this idea of just piling up stones. But it also, to me, is a pretty profound thing in that it's so simple and yet has such a complicated and, I think, interesting story.
Okay, the complicated and interesting story. I mean, the question I got to ask you is, is any pile of rocks a cairn? I mean, what, how, if you're hiking and you're going in some area, how do you know that this was put there by forces other than nature?
Good question. And I think part of it has to do with the shape. It looks like a pile of stone. Yeah, there's a lot of things out there that geology can cause what look like piles of stone. But one question to ask would be is, why is it there? So if you're out in a backcountry area, and you're generally they're built along trails or near areas where people are moving through, if it looks like it, it probably is something that's naturally made. I mean, the definition I've started using is the definition the Supreme Court uses of pornography. You know one when you see it, just like you know pornography. And so people see these things, and part of it, I think, is the fact that people who are out in the backcountry are so used to seeing piles of stone in the sense of it's a trust, that we trust that people have gone before, have left us these little markers to show us the way. And so when you see one, people invariably know what they're seeing. They sort of sense it. There's this connection to it. And that's what really fascinated me, is this idea of connection, that part of the reason we're building them is that we're trying to establish a relationship to an area we've been through and a relationship to people who are also moving through. So it's a community aspect, a community of hikers who share this network of cairns at marked trails.
So now you got to understand the way I think. There's a code, I assume, which means that you don't put a marker that's going to lead people astray. You don't, there's no, are there practical joker cairn builders out there?
Funny you ask. I was talking to a friend who's a park ranger, and he thinks that some people do that. I mean, it's rare, and what's more of the problem is that people build cairns for their own use. Like, say they're going climbing somewhere, and they need to get from point A to point B, and they will sometimes leave a cairned route through a complicated landscape, and other people follow them. So you have a group of people who follow cairns. You have a group of people who build cairns, and then you have another group of people who destroy cairns, and they will destroy every cairn they see.
Oh, wait a second. Stop right there. Who does that?
A variety of people. Well, as I say in the book, I actually got...
And you got to understand, I have not seen the book. I mean, I have the book in my hot little hands, and I've gone through it, and I look for this stuff. So you're talking about what you see in the book. So I'm interested in the people who might destroy cairns and why they would do that.
Right. Well, I freely admit I have destroyed many cairns. I actually got paid by the government to do it when I worked for the Park Service, the National Park Service. And the reason is, in national parks, there's three reasons. One is there is a concern, ecological concern, that people are building cairns in areas, and as they pull the rocks up, they're dismantling the landscape to make these cairns. And there's that aspect. There's also the aspect where, as park rangers, we get concerned that people are being led to territory where A, they shouldn't be, or B, it's beyond their ability. They're being led to an area where you really need to be a climber versus, say, a hiker. And then there's the third concern that's cropped up more and more in national parks, an aesthetic concern, where you're hiking in a park and you'll come across 100 cairns or little stacks of stone in an area that's, you know, maybe 100 square feet, these sort of cities of cairns. And so country, national park rangers, and they are regularly having to destroy cairns because of this concern over the landscape.
Huh. So people, okay, so that's the other, the flip side of it is the pack mentality where folks, there's too much of a good thing. And instead of building a cairn, people should just observe the one that's there and then move on.
Right, or if you want to pile up rocks, I mean, I understand, being someone who views the world through a geologic lens, I get the idea. It's fun to stack rocks, but maybe, you know, take it down or try and put the rocks back where you find it. Recognize that wherever you're going, other people are going to follow, and if, you know, as you said, the pack mentality. If you build a cairn, someone else may do it, and what may have been one or two cairns in a matter of weeks can literally become hundreds of these stacked stones.
And that would be really annoying if you ask me. If I'm a hiker and I come across 100 cairns, why is that a problem?
Oh, it's not a problem. I just think it's funny that it's annoying.
I would find it annoying.
I can't imagine that there would be hundreds anywhere. But I don't know. I'm going to have to start paying attention, looking for them, because I don't know that I've noticed them.
Go to national parks. Go to Yosemite. Go to Acadia. Go to Canyonland, any national park you go to these days that has a lot of rock in it, you will come across an area where there are dozens of these cairns, cities of cairns.
I had no idea.
The other thing you'll see in addition to that is you'll see signs saying, you know, please don't build cairns. It's an ecological, it's an aesthetic, it's a cultural turn. In Hawaii, it's become a problem because people are building them in the lands there in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, and the native people had a tradition of building these cairns, and now non-native people are building them, and it's a cultural concern for them too as well. So,
David, what are you doing? You're just glorifying this. We've got to stop it now. The madness. Stop the madness.
Right. And it's a central issue. I mean, I actually start the book writing about destroying cairns and then go and raise these issues, but then go through and weave in the cultural aspects, some of the geologic, the ecological aspects of building cairns. I mean, I think your initial view on cairns is not unusual. Like, what? Why would I write a book about these little piles of rocks? And I started the same way until I started to dive in and realize these cultural connections. I mean, I make the point that cairns are probably one of our earliest means of communication. As anyone out there, and I would argue, you know, in an area like where Debbie was talking about, the NPRA, up in this vast tundra wilderness, I'm sure the people there built cairns as a way to, you know, share information, like we're going on this route.
So. Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. The name of the book is Cairns, Messengers in Stone, and David B. Williams is the author. If you want information about this and learn more about, see, now I learned about two things I had no clue about before the day started. Go to my website, mikenovak.net. This week's show, I've got the link there. David, much success to you, and destroy as many cairns as you can, but only the ones that are out of control.
Excellent. I'll do my best to be aware of them.
And thank you so much for being on the program. You have a wonderful holiday, and I hope maybe we help you sell a few books here.
I hope so.
All right. And don't forget, send something nice to your publicist.
I will.
All right. Take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Mr. DeMaio in his weather coming up next. Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center says, have yourself a merry little sale. Starting now, all holiday items are 25% off, including fresh-cut Fraser fir Christmas trees and heavy handmade wreaths from North Carolina. This includes holiday commercial-grade LEDs in a variety of colors and sizes, including the very cool and popular LED twig lights. And if you don't have your tree yet, they will deliver your Christmas tree. Bring it into your house. Drink some milk and have some cookies. And they'll set it up in the stand. And don't forget, if you mention the Mike Novak Show, they'll do that for free. They'll drink the milk and eat the cookies for free. Actually, I made that part up. Huh? If you mention the Mike Novak Show, they will deliver your Christmas tree and pick it up after the season. And you know what they'll do? They'll take down the tree, vacuum up the area, and haul it away for recycling. I mean, that's full service for you. No need for you to lift a finger. Meanwhile, like Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center on Facebook for a new gift idea every day through the 24th. Today, if you go there, it's the Awesome Mushroom Garden Kit. Growing your own oyster mushrooms in as little as 10 days, right in the box. Perfect for the foodie, the mad scientist, and the gardener in your life. Join the holiday fun at Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center, 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian village. Tell them Mike sent you.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Here's a tip from the care of trees. I often talk about the economic value of trees, but the human response to trees can be even more important. We feel serene, peaceful, restful, and tranquil in a grove of trees. We are at home there. The calming effect of nearby trees. You know, just talking about trees is calming me down, although looking at my computer is getting me anxious again. But just let me talk about trees. The calming effect of nearby trees and urban greening can significantly reduce workplace stress levels and fatigue, calm traffic, and even decrease the recovery time needed after surgery. Trees can also reduce crime. Apartment buildings with high levels of green space have lower crime rates than nearby apartments without trees. Because of their potential for long life, trees are frequently planted as living memorials. We often become personally attached to trees that we or those we love have planted. The strong ties between people and trees is often evident when community residents speak out against the removal of trees to widen streets or rally to save a particularly large or historic tree. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com, find them on Facebook, or call 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their businesses, people, and their love for trees. He hits the button. No, oh, that's because we've switched it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Novak. I thought we was doing CD1.
Oh, no, that's okay. No, I was doing, you know what?
Acapella, let's go.
Let's just skip the music. Oh. Let's just go to Rick DeMaio. Rick DeMaio, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mike. How are you on this gloomy late October Sunday morning? Oh, wait. It's mid-December. That's right.
In the bleak midwinter, and it's not even winter yet. we're not even going to get to winter.
Logically, we've been in the winter for about, you know, almost 2.5 weeks now. But, from a standpoint of it actually feeling like it, welcome to Memphis, Tennessee, right?
Absolutely. What?
Well, this is what winter is like in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, kind of dreary and wet and not too cold and
yeah,
that sort of thing.
It's strange, Mike. And, you know, yesterday driving back from DeKalb, where I officially graduated with my Master's of Science from NIU, I knew you were going to plug that, so I figured I'd beat you to it.
Wow. You know, I was... I was going to give you the kudos, but hey.
Yeah, add it on your list of things to talk about.
Let's give, you got your master's in what now?
Meteorology, yeah.
It's about time.
Yeah.
Give him a ding.
You're getting
you
a ding.
And graduate your undergrad in 1985. You go, yeah, you know, I'll finish it 30 years later, you know.
That's always my plan. Wait a second. In honor of Rick DeMaio, you got your ding for your master's degree.
Wow, that's funny because that's exactly what they did on stage yesterday when they handed out the microphone. Boy, you're really good.
I am totally good.
But anyway, you know, we're driving back. It's about 5 p.m. and I'm like, it's 50 degrees on my thermometer, and it's like bizarre. But yeah, you know, this is strange weather, and you know, the pattern, as we said last week, was going to get cold, and it's going to get cold, but it just didn't happen this week. And, you know, a few of us in the weather community kind of like, we go, gosh, darn it, everything says it's supposed to be getting cold. And it is, you know, 1,000 miles west of us and 1,000 miles north of us where they've had some absolutely frigid conditions across, you know, central and western areas of Canada, a lot of snow out in the Rocky Mountains and the Pacific Northwest, which is great for them. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that they like to get early in the year. Get a lot of that early season snow melt. You get a lot of that infiltration into the soil. The reservoirs just love it. So they're good to go even for next year. But, man, we're down like 11 inches of rain below normal from what we should be getting, you know, in the Chicagoland area this time of the year. And get this, compared to last year, this is amazing. We are down 24 inches of rain from just a year ago. That to me blows my mind. That shows you how wet it was last year and then how, you know, abnormally dry it's been this year. I've never seen these dramatic, you know, not so much week to week, month to month changes, but, you know, just seasonal shifts from one year to the next. It just seems like that's the norm.
And it's wreaking havoc with the Great Lakes water levels and the Mississippi. They're you know, trying to get barges up and down there. It's causing all kinds of problems.
Yeah, I was talking with someone about a month ago who runs a lot of these barges up and down the Illinois, the Sag Canal there. And he says that he's actually had to load less payload on his barges due to the fact that, you know, it obviously makes the barge weigh less. But you're not dragging the barge along, you know, the basin of the river in some areas where you have to worry about it. So it's obviously hurting, you know, the shipping traffic. But I've never seen a beach along parts of Lake Michigan, you know, up along, say, the Loyola Beach and a little bit closer to Evanston. I've never seen the lake as low as it's been, and it's now below record levels, which date all the way back to 1964. Now, I know that's not a long period of time, but we keep seeing these records. We keep seeing these records. And, you know, this week when we get to, today, December 16th, is the latest ever for measurable snowfall in Chicago, and obviously we've broken that today. And the last time we actually had an inch of snow, you got to go all the way back to February 24th, and it's just amazing that you keep going, okay, when was the last time? Okay, when was the last time? Okay, when was the last time these things happened? And you have to constantly go back into record books that you didn't think you'd have to actually, you know, open up and dust off the, you know, push off the dust and kind of see where these things actually occurred. But that's pretty much the pattern that we're in.
Yikes. You know, I want to, in spite of all that, I want to congratulate you for going out on the limb about the White Christmas. Now, are you still holding to that? You told us that.
I think so, because this Thursday, there's a significant storm that is predicted to come through the Mississippi Valley. Now, whether or not it's going to be white in Chicago is still yet to be seen. You know, and you're going to probably hear about, you know, the first big snow of the year probably coming up, you know, over the next 3 or 4 days on the newscast, because it looks like it's going to hit late Wednesday night into Thursday. But we've seen these things so many times before where the rain-snow line is right over us, and all of a sudden it shifts to the west. And we end up getting rain here, and they end up getting clobbered with 6 to 8 inches of snow in western Illinois. But it definitely is the first significant chance of any snow that's going to come through. If it does snow, obviously, it could have the potential of lasting all the way through the 25th, because it's going to be occurring on the 19th and the 20th. But there's still a lot of room for that even to melt even after it happens. So I'm still going to hold on to a white Christmas, but definitely it seems like the next 2 to 3 days, generally temperatures pretty much low to mid-40s, and the next best chance of snow probably Wednesday night into Thursday. And that could be a significant one for sure.
Really significant. So, yeah,
you know, it's got one of these things, Mike, where, you know, it's coming all the way out of the southern plains, and those always have a lot of moisture with them. And when you get things like that with the potential of an inch to an inch and a half of rain where you do get snow, you know, you'll easily get 6 to 10 inches out of this. So places, I would say Peoria, west of Rockford, into the western areas of Wisconsin, significant amount of snow there. Still to be determined for the Chicagoland area, but we'll keep our third eye on it. And obviously this is going to be one for, you know, one that's going to probably disrupt travel a lot. But, you know, we all know that it's like that week even before Christmas, everybody seems to go kind of like downtime. The roads are less travel. A lot of kids are off from school. People taking an extra week off. So it's probably not going to have as much of an impact on, you know, travel as it would normally would if it occurred early in the month of December.
Yeah, but with each day before then, we continue to add to the record.
Yeah.
Which is days without snow. What are we? We're up like to 285 or something like that?
285 for days without measurable snow. That goes all the way back to the 4th of March. But the latest ever for an inch of snow was December 16th, and that's obviously today. So not only did we break the record or continue to break the record for measurable snowfall drought, obviously we've also broken the record today for the latest 1 inch of snow. So you go back to March, and a lot of people go, well, yeah, you could get snow in mid-December, but now you're looking at the fact that March we had temperatures in the 80s, even before we hit the first day of spring, and now you haven't even had an inch of snow yet, and we're, you know, 5-6 days away from Christmas here. So very, very strange weather, particularly on either end of the bookend, so to say, of your winter and spring season.
Once we get that snow, do you see that cold air dumping down here and changing our pattern?
You know what? Everything says that once it gets cold, it wants to stay cold. But I'm telling you, Mike, it's strange. Every time the long-range models wants to get us cold, the cold kind of delays itself and stays further west. So, and you have to respect those trends. I think the one thing we've learned about long-range forecasting is we're really only good as the consistency of the numerical models are. You know, obviously we see signals, and climatologists will say, no, we see these signals. But when the signals are weak, you have to rely more on a computer-generated forecast. When the signals are strong, your kind of general intuition, your gut feeling takes over. I think right now the gut feeling and intuition is not very strong. So we're relying more and more on numerical models, and those seem to be trending towards the colder air kind of arriving later in the month of December and early January, but we'll still see how that turns out. I would say there's a good chance it's going to get colder by the end of the month, but that seems to be being pushed off as well a few weeks.
You know, climate variability, I don't throw that at you, pal, but
and you know what? And that's another factor that I don't think you can actually put a numerical value on. How do you model climate variability? I think that's another part of the equation that we're all kind of, you know, beginning to live with and learn about.
You sound like a guy who just got his you don't do the arts, you do the science.
Yeah, we do the science. There's a little bit more thinking involved with that. I'm not taking anything away from the MBA, but there just seems to be sometimes you go, wow, I had to do that? Holy smoke.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
Hey,
I'm glad to hear it, and I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Talk to you next week, Mike.
Have a great Sunday.
Thanks.
Bye. Second hour, we will talk about Starved Rock State Park. Mike Sanders will see if he can get my computer into shape, and we hope you stick around because we have even more books that we're going to talk about. It was just one of those days, just one of those crazy days. I'm just doing my own because we don't have. Can I just do this and get the
good planets are hard to find?
Can I go back and forth with this so I can get the
sure.
the other thing? Let's just do that, and then let's do that, and there we go. See, now if I had that up there, second.
Now see, I think bada bing, bada boom.
No, if I say that, I'll just get in trouble from Rick DeMaia. Okay, because he thinks that I was going
to
do.
I thought it might be a good Italian segue to, hey, it worked.
It might. Let's try this.
Steve.
Oh, no, I don't want to do that. Okay. No, we're going to play. I got
Hold
nothing.
Hold on. We're getting there.
Are we getting there?
You're getting there.
I got nothing.
I have faith.
I got nothing for you.
No, I've got total faith in
you. Okay. Let's try one more. Let's put into the. See, I had all those things on a disc that was going to be on my computer, and now the computer's just totally melted down. Let's just do something kind of fun here. All right, like a sort of a fun song.
Sometimes here in the West, it doesn't snow much on Christmas, and so it makes it kind of tough for old Santa to get his job done. But thanks to the truck drivers, he'll be here Christmas Day.
Well, I've been sort of wondering about Santa Claus this year.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, their business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Word. Well, everybody listen closely, and I'll tell you what I heard.
It's kind of a Denny Hamlin song here.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah.
I can see that.
There we go. We're off to a rough start in the second hour. The computer is just, oh, man, it's not happy. It's not happy. So I haven't been able to follow Twitter the way I'd like. I have my tweet deck usually up on my computer and can't even get it to load.
Well, I think we know what's on the Christmas list for Mike Nova.
I would think so. I hope so. You know, just getting it fixed for now.
Yeah.
You know, so I can just look at my tweet deck. Second hour of the Mike Novak Show. We should get our guest.
I was going to call him right now.
Okay. Her.
Call her right now.
That's right.
That is a Cindy.
And I had, other things here that of course I can't even get to because this computer is really unhappy right now. It's just, it's miserable. But in the second part of the show, this hour, we're going to finally get to those books that you are recommending, Lisa.
Oh, great. I'm excited.
Tell us about them.
Well, you know, I picked three books on energy.
Gosh, I wonder why.
Well, I know that was one of the reasons why you invited me to sit in with you on Sundays, is to kind of start bringing that into the conversation. The first book is a little bit older. It was written a couple years ago by Amanda Little, called Power Trip. And she actually got the opportunity to go to a fracking well and climb aboard one of the deep rigs in the Gulf Coast and actually see a lot of this technology and methods for extracting energy from the planet up live and personal. And so it's really kind of, I kind of compared it to the Lonely Planet Guide of Energy, where she's actually taking you on a journey and really painting a picture of her experience as she traveled across the U.S. She's an investigative reporter with Vanderbilt University, she teaches investigative reporting, and this was her actually being an investigative reporter and kind of climbing into the depths. She actually climbed into all the tunnels in New York, which were recently flooded. And
she went there too.
She was there before the floods, obviously, because the book's a couple years old. But to just really see the infrastructure that we have and where its weaknesses are and where its vulnerabilities are, and really explores our, you know, total addiction and how we got to where we are today. So I thought that was a really good book. And then that segued into a second book. It's actually a really good pick because it's a 99-cent book on Kindle. So a very nice, easy download, and it explores the history of energy in Germany and how and why they've been so successful. Their original thought process was after the Chernobyl disaster and realizing that we are a very tied and interconnected planet, and that our energy choices affect our neighbors, and they were directly impacted. I'm sure it had to be pretty frightening to have a nuclear cloud or cloud of radiation floating over your country and not knowing where it would land. And so that was a very motivating factor for them to say, hey, listen, we need to find a cleaner source of energy, and how are we going to do this? And explores how how they made it successful, and a great model for, you know, what we can do here in the U.S. In fact, this year on my birthday, May 26th, Germany had one day that they were actually able to produce 50% of all of the energy that the nation needed from renewable sources, solar and wind. So when a lot of the naysayers say, hey, we can't do it, you know, our demands are too high, it's really not true. It's a matter of will and effort. Mm-hmm. And Germany has truly led the way in doing that. And OSHA went to Germany and just like Amanda, wanted to see these things up close and personal, wanted to talk to the people who are supportive. And it really was a culture change in Germany. They call it, I'm sure I'm going to slaughter this, but Energie Verde. There's my Spanish pronunciation of a German word. it's been a culture change of understanding the results of our energy addiction and a desire for something more sustainable, and then just the total commitment to making it happen. So they are well on their way to being energy independent by 2050. And unfortunately, the devastation of Fukushima and all that Japan has suffered has, you know, just really solidified their desire to move in this direction. And I think it's a guiding light that the rest of the world can follow. I mean, Portugal has 50% of their energy, Spain 35%, Italy is at, I think, about 20%. The Vatican has a major solar reserve, and their goal is to be pretty much independent by 2020. This is only 8 years away.
So you're telling me that even the Vatican is more technologically advanced than the United States of America.
Truly.
We are such a sad country.
Well, and unfortunately, a big chunk of it, and around 10:30, we'll be speaking with Danny Kennedy, the third author, or the third book that I selected for our Christmas choices. Danny Kennedy is with Sungevity, which is a leasing company which has made solar cost-free, basically, for homeowners because it's a leasing program. Mm-hmm. But it's called Rooftop Revolution, and really the importance, and I don't want to steal our thunder at 10:30, but the importance of making these choices and debunking the myths. There's a lot of bad information about there, thinking that, you know, we do not have the technology that we need, but it's just not true. And unfortunately, you know, the same powers of be that are pushing for Starved Rock and fracking in Illinois and, you know, dirty energy and just perpetuating the myth that we are completely dependent and there's nothing we can do, that we actually do have solutions. They are economic. They are viable. They are ready right now. We don't have to wait. We can just start marching forward.
And that is the segue. Let's go to the phones and bring in Cindy Skrickrud. Good morning, Cindy. How are you?
Morning, Mike. I'm fine. How are you?
All right. Cindy is the clean water advocate for the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. And excuse me. As you can hear from what Lisa was saying, I think what she said was a perfect lead into what's happening outside of Starved Rock State Park. Happy anniversary to us, Cindy.
Yep. It's been a long slog.
It's been a year, exactly. Yep. A year since we started fighting this battle, and it's still being fought. One of the more significant actions was taken this week when three organizations, the Sierra Club, Open Lands, and Prairie Rivers Network, filed suit. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that suit and what it means in the immediate future?
Yeah, so it was this week on Wednesday that we filed a petition for review of administrative action. That's just, you know, legalese. We filed this complaint in the circuit court in Sangamon County. It's in response to the Illinois DNR Office of Mines and Minerals issuing a permit giving Mississippi Sand the go-ahead to start mining adjacent to Starved Rock State Park. They issued the permit on November 13th, and so really this was the next step that was open to us in continuing to fight to protect Starved Rock State Park.
Yeah, I've looked at that what do you call it?
The complaint.
The complaint, and it's kind of interesting. Let me read a little bit from it. Defendant Mississippi Sand LLC there's a number of defendants in here. The plaintiffs, as I said, are Sierra Club, Prairie Rivers Network, and Open Lands. The defendants in this are the Office of Mines and Minerals of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, the Office of Realty and Environmental Planning of IDNR, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, Michael Woods, Director of Offices, Office of Mines and Minerals, Michael Falter, Supervisor of Operations, Mine Safety and Training Division in the Office of Mines and Minerals, Todd Rettig, Acting Director of the Office of Realty and Environmental Planning, and Mark Miller, Director of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, and of course, Mississippi Sand LLC. Now, it says in part that the defendants failed to comply with the SMLCRA, which is the Illinois Surface Mined Land Conservation and Reclamation Act, by submitting a conservation and reclamation plan, a reclamation map, an affected area map with its application for a surface mining permit, which inaccurately and inadequately describe its proposed silica mining project adjacent to the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park.
It says they violated SMLCRA in that they approved the flawed reclamation plan, reclamation map, and affected area map, and as evidenced by their written findings, failed to consider adequately all of the 13 factors relating to the short and long-term impacts of the proposed mine as required by the SMLCRA. Is there, do you call it called SMLCRA or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. Well, this is the Mining Act.
But here's the best part in the complaint. As a result, OMM defendants and IDNR made an arbitrary and capricious decision to approve the Mississippi Sand Surface Mining Permit. I like the word the words arbitrary and capricious. Now, obviously, I'm not a legal guy, and there's certain reasons for putting certain words in there. But the point is, I guess you guys are making, and I imagine you had to wait until this point to file this, that basically the IDNR and OMM didn't do their job.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and you know, Mike, that we've been trying over the past year, we have been pushing them to really do the thorough job that's required to consider these 13 factors before they permitted the mine, especially when you're permitting a frac sand mine right next to Starved Rock State Park. As you recall, it was back in March that we put in a citizen complaint letter, and you were one of the citizens that signed that letter. We had about 30 people that signed that letter, and there we, in quite detail, laid out our concerns on all these issues that OMM is supposed to consider before they issue a mining permit. And they've just failed to do that. They failed to really take into account how this will impact the land value in the area, the local tax base, the economy of the region and the state. There's air pollution issues, water pollution issues, noise pollution issues, drainage issues, and so.
Yeah, among the issues here cited include the, and I'm reading from what you guys sent, include the short and long-term impact of the proposed mining on vegetation, wildlife, fish, land use, land values, local tax base, the economy of the region and the state, employment opportunities, air pollution, water pollution, soil contamination, noise pollution, and drainage as required by the Surface Mined Land Conservation and Reclamation Act and its regulations. A lot of stuff.
Yeah, and you know, they're you know, by the act, they're required to consider those short and long-term impacts for any mine that they permit. Well, if there was ever going to be a mine that you wanted to make sure that you crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's, it would be a mine next to Starved Rock State Park, which is such a feature of our state, so beloved by people. We've had thousands of people who have sent letters on this issue. We just couldn't let this go by. We needed to take this next step and ask for a review of their decision.
And part of what you're talking about in here is also the idea that this process did not allow the public to be heard.
Yes, the whole issue of they actually never had an official public comment period in which people could, where they solicited information from people, where they told people about the whole mining plan and the reclamation plan, and gave the people an opportunity to comment. There was no written public comment period. We asked repeatedly for them to hold an official public hearing. They never did. So, we kept putting in comments, but you know, they never gave the people a chance to officially, provide input and just for them to solicit information from surrounding landowners. That they failed to do that.
And of course, you call it arbitrary and capricious. In the suit, I guess the question remains, why did this happen in this way? Is it because, you know, you'd hate to think that that IDNR was acting maliciously or maybe just incompetently, or, you know, I talked with Jennifer Walling from, the Environmental Council, Illinois Environmental Council, the other week, and she was happy because she reported on more funding that's going to IDNR, the question I asked her was, were they unable to fulfill their duties in this case in the mine and get everything done because of lack of funds and lack of staff? Is that part of this issue, do you think?
That could well be part of it. I mean, we know that the DNR has just, you know, been stripped to the bone in terms of staff. So it certainly does. I mean, I think we're sympathetic that it makes their job all that more difficult when they're very understaffed. But that doesn't mean that the job still doesn't have to get done. In this case, it's kind of double duty because the DNR is. Within it, the DNR contains the Office of Mines and Minerals, which is the agency tasked with the kind of, review of mining permits, and they need to be a neutral party in reviewing those permits. But at the same time here, the DNR is the adjacent landowner with Starved Rock State Park.
Yeah, we've talked about the conflict of interest many times, and that is the thing that boggles my mind, that... IDNR is attempting to do both at the same time in their contradictory missions to facilitate the sale of minerals while at the same time protecting natural areas. I just don't know how they can do that, especially in this case.
And so, while we want this permit to be revoked. We also our aim here is to reform the process, so we don't see problems like this happening in the future.
Yeah, that I guess that's another question for this, which is this to be precedent setting? Is that the part of the idea of this suit? Do you think?
Well, yeah. You know, I can't predict what the future's gonna hold, but I think we certainly entered this complaint because Starved Rock is so emblematic of the importance of public lands in Illinois, the importance of protecting conservation lands throughout the state, and recognizing the value that they pose to local economies, to Illinois tourism. So time will tell, but definitely this was an important situation that we needed to follow all the steps that we needed to take to protect the park.
That is Cindy Skrickrud, who is the clean water advocate for the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. As I mentioned, other organizations are involved in this complaint filed against the IDNR and others. They include Open Lands and Prairie Rivers Network. So congratulations to those people, too, for standing up. For the citizens in the, not just the citizens in the area, many of whom are going to be affected in a negative way by this, by the silica dust and the traffic, truck traffic and the park itself, which could suffer water, environmental damage, et cetera, but the people of Illinois, the people of surrounding states who love Starved Rock Park, this could potentially change the very nature of their experience there. And you don't want to do that. That's crazy. You know, it's interesting, Cindy, that if you there's an article in the News Tribune out of LaSalle that I have linked to also on my site, and they interviewed Tony Giordano, who's president of Mississippi Sand. He's saying now that he thinks that this lawsuit could delay the project for as long as a year. And I'm saying yippee-yay.
Yeah, we. I mean, what's going to happen in the near term is that they have 30, the DNR, Office of Mines and Minerals, has 30 days to respond. So that, you know, that's through mid-January now, so we'll wait for that. I want to remind folks, though, that the mine still does not have a permit that it needs from Illinois EPA, so that's another outstanding issue.
Great.
So they,
yeah.
Well, the issuing of the mining permit by the Office of Mines and Minerals was certainly a critical step that we needed to challenge. The IEPA still has not acted on their permit.
That's a really good point, is that this could perhaps make the lawsuit moot. I don't know. I put the link to your website, to Illinois Sierra Club. You can find it at MikeNovak.net. Read down to the very bottom of the article I've posted about this complaint. And you can contact Governor Pat Quinn and let him know that you don't want this to happen, that the sand mine is in an inappropriate place. But as you say, so I assume that the EPA is still continuing to look at this, and they will make some sort of ruling perhaps while this issue is still pending.
Yeah. I know the last we've spoken with them, you know, no decision's been made. You know, like I said, probably thousands of people certainly weighed in and asked them to require an individual permit for this mine and to hold a public hearing, and so they haven't made a decision on that yet. What IEPA has to permit is there will be the mine will pump out of its pit while it's mining because it wants to keep the pit dry. They would discharge stormwater off their site, and to do that they need a Clean Water Act permit from Illinois EPA, and they don't have that yet.
And one of the arguments that's being made by the folks in the industry is that, well, the area is surrounded by those sand mines anyway. Why? What's the big deal about this one? They're saying that, we've talked about it on this show. We talked about some of the, I've had some of the folks who are up Utica way, who are having sand mines built even as we speak, and the soil piled up in front of their homes, destroying their property values. How is this different? Is it just the state park, or is there more to this?
Well, I think, you know, in general, we want to ensure that the Office of Mines and Minerals is doing the kind of evaluation of the short-term and long-term impacts, considering those 13 factors, for every mine they permit. So this is, you know, I think this challenge of this permit will help in all situations. And I think this one has gained the attention it has because it's right there on the doorsteps of Starved Rock State Park. You know, I know LaSalle County has a long history of sand mining. You read about other communities in the Midwest along the Mississippi River and such where they've mined sand for years and years. But boy, we're seeing with fracking, we're seeing a rush for frack sand mining. And so I think that means that it's a different scale of operation. So I think that, you know, things may well start feeling a little different in LaSalle County than they have in the past with all these mines that are ramping up in the area.
Yeah, and that actually gets to the point that Lisa was making to start this conversation, that the big lie is that the only way we can have efficient, affordable energy is to get the gas out of the ground.
Is to destroy our environment.
Yeah, and that's just not true. She knows, working for the solar industry, and we'll be talking to a guy about that in just a second. Danny Kennedy, who wrote a book called Rooftop Revolution, How Solar Power Can Save Our Economy and Our Planet from Dirty Energy. And this is as dirty as it gets right now. So it looks, at the very least, as though this has slowed the process down, which is a good thing. I don't know if you're privy to this, Cindy Schreckrud. What are you hearing? Anything out of the governor's office or the lieutenant governor's office? I understand that the attorney general's office had taken an interest in this as well. Is there anything new to report on those fronts?
No, I don't have anything new to report on those fronts, Mike. I haven't talked to anybody in the lieutenant's governor's office since we filed the complaint. But you know, they've really been on the forefront of paying attention to this issue, getting information out to people, providing opportunities for people to talk with staff from the different agencies. So I think they'll continue to play that, you know, play a key role in this whole issue.
I certainly hope so. And that's why we encourage people to contact the governor. Make your voice heard. There's still opportunity. This is far from over. There's a lot that's going to happen. Perhaps it's been slowed down. The juggernaut has been slowed down, this runaway train. And now we'll hear in court whether the IDNR and the Office of Mines and Minerals lived up to what it was supposed to do. Did its due diligence in examining the question of whether the sand mine should be there. Cindy Schreckrud, thank you so much for being on the program. Always a pleasure. And, you know, now we enter our second year of following this issue.
We sure do. And I'm certainly looking forward to more conversations about distributed energy and solar energy. Those are all things that Sierra Club's working for too. So definitely, we've got to be working on these issues on all fronts. So
yeah, and I know it's your job to do this, and Open Lands and Prairie Rivers Network. I mean, you guys have been looking at this issue for a long time and figure out what your strategy was going to be. But nevertheless, thank you for the work you do for our natural areas in Illinois, all of these organizations, and thank you for figuring out a way to slow this process down so we can look at it more thoroughly. We will talk again, Cindy.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Thank you to you for all your support and getting the word out on that on the issue. It's helped us a lot over the past year, and we'll continue working together in next year.
Yeah, you know, and maybe there's a reason to have a Merry Christmas in if you live near Starved Rock State Park this holiday season. Let's hope that happens for the years to come. All right, take care, Cindy.
Hey, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas.
Merry
Bye-bye.
Christmas to you, too. There we go. I knew something like that was going to happen. I didn't know exactly when or exactly what it would be. You know?
Well, it does offer hope.
It does.
You know, and it offers hope. There's still legal means of ending this, and there's no permit from the EPA, and so there's still avenues to shut it down. We still need people involved, though.
Yeah, and you still
talk to your friends, your neighbors. Yep. Post, please. Yep. Do whatever you can. Talk to the gov. Talk to your reps. Let people know we cannot have this in our state.
Yeah, I'm thinking of having a beer with the governor and saying, Pat, can we talk about this a little bit? Maybe he'll give me a call and we'll have that beer. I'll say, Pat, this is not such a good idea. Could you do whatever you can? It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. That is Lisa Albrecht and Denny Sheeters here as well. The computer's actually, it's slow, but I'm getting something now. I'm actually on TweetDeck. Not that I've been able to do anything. We don't have there's not a lot of Twitter activity going on today, but you know, that's showbiz.
Miss you, Sarah.
We do miss you, Sarah, and we'll see her in a couple. Before we get to Danny, we should preview what's going to happen next week, because Denny was part of this, and you were, Lisa, and Sarah, and Ron Cowgill.
Little holiday treat.
And even Mike Sanders, the annual version of It's a Wonderful Slice of It's a Wonderful Life
will air next week. And I enlisted all those folks to play roles.
That was a blast.
Yeah, it's on tape. I have some editing to do yet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There was a lot of giggling going on.
There was a fair amount of giggling. Lisa plays Mary. Mary, what's happened to us? Please, Mary, where's our kids?
I love you, George Bailey, till the day I die.
Oh, wow. Look at that. She's good.
Yeah, she's good. She's
remember
good.
Her line.
You play St. Joseph?
Yes.
So Denny plays, and a couple, and he played a couple of incidental characters, like the man in
Angry Man.
Angry Man. Angry Man number two.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. Sarah plays Zuzu and Janie and plays the piano, too, during the show.
But knocking it out of the park, Ron Cowgill.
Ron Cowgill as Uncle Billy.
I'm okay.
He's the perfect Uncle Billy, okay. Actually. He is the perfect. He is Uncle Billy. I don't know if you realize that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's next week on the big festive Christmas show on the 23rd. Where you going to be here, Denny, or are you going to be out of town?
I'll be here.
All right. I'll be here. Lisa won't be. Sarah won't be. So we'll have to hold down the fort.
We can do it.
All right. Coming up next, Danny Kennedy. So in our discussion about solar power, still hunting for the perfect gift? For the gardeners on your list, you need to take a trip to Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center on Dempster Street in Des Plaines. Lurvy is bursting with holiday cheer and everything you need to decorate both indoors and out this holiday season. Just yesterday, the 15th, they put all holiday decor on sale. So those of you procrastinating, get over to Lurvy. And the way it works is that the more you buy, the more you save. Get $10 off a purchase of $50 or more, $25 off a purchase of $100 or more, and $50 off a purchase of $175 or more. Of course, they have fresh-cut trees, wreaths, containers, centerpieces, accents, poinsettias, sometimes known as poinsettias, and gifts for every gardener on your list. Don't forget to like them on Facebook. And this comment showed up. Just a few days ago, I was like cruising their Facebook page, and this person wrote, "It's been a few years since I've come out of the country sticks to visit. I was like a kid in a candy store. So much product, so much awesome, professional, and helpful staff." Good stuff. They're easy to get to. Just a quarter mile east of the Tri-State Tollway, I-294, at 2550 East Dempster in Des Plaines. Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center. Go to Lurveys.com, LURVEYS.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. It's time to be thinking about winter pruning of your trees. Consistent pruning can ensure your trees continue to provide their aesthetic value and function. Proper, conscientious, expert pruning can enhance the beauty and function of your trees while reducing the chance that your tree will cause damage by losing limbs during a winter storm. When the leaves have dropped in the fall, it's easier to see the structure and architecture of your trees. And when summer annuals have been removed, there is less risk of disrupting your landscape. If and when the soil freezes, and that seems to be a big if around Chicago lately, equipment can often gain closer access, which can enhance the safety of the workers and reduce your costs. Winter pruning can also avoid encouraging serious diseases that are active and spread easily during the growing season. See, there's a whole bunch of good reasons to consider having your tree pruned at this time of year.
Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com. Find them on Facebook or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
No, Merry Christmas.
And a twisted New Year.
It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Now, Lisa's the one who found this book. In fact, we've talked a little bit about some of the books that she tracked down, energy books. And I'm going to bring in Danny Kennedy, who's the author of Rooftop Revolution, How Solar Power Can Save Our Economy and Our Planet from Dirty Energy. Good morning, Danny. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks very much. I'm well.
Pleasure to have you on the show. I'm going to kind of let Lisa jump to the head of the line here, because you're the one who knew about this book. How did you find out about it?
Well, actually, I happen to coincidentally know Danny's father-in-law, who was promoting the book to me. There's a project, the Unitarian Church out in Elgin put solar panels on their building, and his father-in-law was very involved in that process. And as soon as the book came out, kept waving it around saying, you have to buy this book, you have to buy this book, and give it as gifts to everybody you know. And a big promoter could not have been more excited about it or more proud, really. you know, I've heard of Danny in the past. For those in the industry who probably know, he started Sungevity, which is a groundbreaking method of putting solar on your roof with no upfront cost, which is one of the barriers. And so he's a problem solver and a Greenpeace guy, actually, turned evangelist. In fact, in his book, he refers to himself, or I think others refer to you as that, right, Danny, as the Richard Simmons of... solar.
Yes.
I'm trying to not picture the shorts or the curly hair.
Right. I've got the curly hair. I don't have the shorts.
Okay, good.
So welcome. Thank you so much for being on the show. I know you're headed out of town, and so it's great that you were able to squeeze us in this morning.
No, I'm very glad to do it. I can't wait to bring the solar revolution to Chicago and Illinois. So good to be talking on the program.
Well, so no, what really prompted you? Because Sungevity has been, you know, wildly successful in California. So why have you decided to take it the next step further? I mean, on your website, you have links that allow people to communicate with their legislators and make this a broader issue across the nation. What really kind of drove you to take that, you know, that next step?
Oh, I would say we're, you know, a very missionary company with a kind of mission to build the world's most energized network of people powering their lives with sunshine. So it's not going to stop in California. In fact, it's only just begun. We're now in 9 states across the country, and we're also serving partners in the Netherlands, in Europe, and in Australia. There's a company there that I'm going to go visit over the next month, using our software platform and also the sort of pay-as-you-go basis for a solar project that you mentioned is the real game changer here in the States. That's allowed a lot of people to bring solar to their homes and the benefits of it, which are many. So really, I mean, I think we're on this sort of inflection point where solar is spreading rapidly through the built environment. You don't see it so much because, you know, it's coming from almost 0 to 1 and 2% of the housing stock. But exponential curves have this incredible way of catching up with us. You know, if you think about cell phones 15, 20 years ago, they were at the same level, you know, 0 to 1% and then doubled and then doubled again, which was 4%, and then again to 8 and 16 and 32. And now, a few years later, there's more cell phones than there are humans. So solar, because of its advantages, is on a similar adoption curve in our society. It's just, it's a better machine for making electricity, and I think ultimately the economics win.
Well, and I think that's something that certainly here in Illinois, and I'm assuming in the rest of the country as well, that people just don't realize. I mean, the political football that was Solyndra over the over the summer, and you kind of mentioned, you know, how out of whack that reporting was on the whole cylinder thing, and how it was really kind of became the battle cry for the fossil fuel industry, from especially with the coverage that was at a number of television stations, including Fox News.
Sure, and you know, you've seen that continue even to this week. There's more negativity, while our competitor, SolarCity, which is a great company doing similar work to Pioneer Solar, for example, they're doing 300,000 military homes, which I think is really important work to give the best themselves as they come home from fighting for oil, the chance to benefit from clean energy in a true independent way that, you know, is harvesting the sunshine falling on their own homes rather than going off to the Middle East to fight for the supply lines of 200 million year old sunlight. So some SolarCity this week went public and, you know, there's lots of poo-pooing it and downplaying it. And yet, as soon as the public market got a taste for a solar service company stock, it went up 50%. Just as a good indication of the people aren't believing the hype. There's a lot of negativity and there's a lot of nabobs slinging mud and trying to cause Solyndra and other things to become like the frame of the solar industry. It's a failure. But the truth is, we all know it's a success. It's an American success. And it's just a better, smarter way of doing this thing called electricity. And the only reflection I'd offer, you know, it sounds like your program and listeners are very attuned to social movements and social change and how it happens. And where I think we're at is the spectrum that Gandhi said, that first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And, you know, for the previous 20, 30 years since Jimmy Carter, they've been ignoring solar. You know, it hasn't been a worry. But then over the last 5 to 10 years, as it scaled in production and became cheaper and more competitive, they started to laugh at us and say, oh, that's cute, that's interesting, but don't worry about it. Now they're fighting us pretty vigorously. They're putting serious bucks into trying to stop the spread of solar.
How, you know, that's
as we win.
That's an interesting comment, trying to stop solar. Why on earth would you try to stop harnessing the sun's energy? That just seems like madness.
Because the wealthiest class of people ever in the history of humanity has made most of their money and concentrated most of their power through the accumulation of oil, coal, and gas reserves. If you think about, you know, the Saudi royal family and the Rockefellers and their heirs and a very few other families and people, they've been able to accumulate wealth and power for the last century by selling us electricity through coal and the service of transportation through oil and now gas. And we've got an alternative that doesn't require a fuel, basically. All of us benefit from sunshine. There's no accumulating it. There's no controlling it and capitalizing on it. It's spread very thin. And so the whole world can have electricity without buying from a fuel provider. And cutting out the middleman like that is a huge pain for the middlemen, which is why the Koch brothers, you know, numbers 3 and 4 in the Forbes lists in America, who made their fortune on gas and oil, put hundreds of millions of dollars into an election to fight a guy who, you know, in even moderate ways believes in solar and clean energy, let alone, you know, those of us really trying to push the agenda.
Well, and I think that's really key is right there, is that what they're trying to do is they don't want us to be aware that we can be independent. They'd like us to continue to be hooked on, you know, them as really kind of the junkie that's trying to, you know, continue this forward, because they profit at unbelievable records. When we could actually own our own power and have our own independence, and what comes with that is, you know, is going to be economic prosperity everywhere that solar and wind goes. The amount of jobs is just remarkable. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, that's right. The good news is, you know, we can do this and we can provide for all of them. You know, the 100% doesn't have to be 1 versus 99 or anything. We can all benefit from this. There's huge economic opportunity in rewiring America and then rewiring the world to this new distributed energy utility solution. As you say, just jobs at the level we're at, which is less than 1% of electricity supply. We already employ 120,000 Americans. Not many of them in Illinois, but some in the manufacturing side. But 120,000 Americans in solar. In coal, there's 160,000 workers all up, from the mining through the railroading, which is a big chunk of it, into the power plant operation. They're you know, a third to a half of electricity supply, depending on where you are in the country. So they only employ a little over 50% more people than us, and they're 20 to 30 times bigger than us. As we scale, and, you know, in states like California, it's inevitable, even according to the utilities, that we'll be 10% of electricity supply by 2020, say. We will employ millions of Americans. And these are jobs that can't be offshore. They're jobs that are permanent and good jobs. You know, they're working these rooftop installations and other installations. They're maintaining them. They're servicing them. Those are long-term jobs, and that's built into the cost structure of solar electricity, which is cheaper than fossil fuel electricity, especially if you start to incorporate some of the externalized costs like carbon pollution or particulate emissions and, you know, the killing of kids with asthma and public health issues.
You know, I got a question there, Denny. let's go to the phone lines and bring in Dave in Hoffman Estates. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Yeah, hey, Mike. I sent an article to you, but unfortunately on the old address on the snail mail, but in just what it is about where this is, Finland is going to be the first European country to eliminate the use of coal as an energy source by 2025. And because it says the European Union has a mandate to have 20% of its energy produced by renewable sources by 2020, and for the 20%, Finland plans to eliminate the coal use and replace it with wind power. And goes on, and it kind of basically ends. It says coal use as an energy source accounts for 20% of the world's carbon emission. China is the world's leader in coal use, getting 70% of its energy from coal, and the U.S. is second.
I think I just got that that thing you sent. You probably sent it off to the Pulaski Street address.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. But I appreciate you bringing that up. Do you want to comment on that, David? Or Danny, sorry?
Great point from the listener that, you know, Europe is really leading the march on this. I mean, Germany this year in May had a number of days where more than 50% of their electricity supply, like the electricity consumed by Germans, was solar electricity. Many European countries are now more than a half renewably powered, wind and solar largely, on some days, given the resource. But, you know, if you think about Germany, it's got 27 gigawatts. That's like 27 large coal or nuclear power plants across Germany. And Germany has a less good solar resource than you guys do in Illinois. It's more like Alaska in terms of sunlight.
Exactly, yes.
So you can, you know, if you can see that kind of build out in the German economy, and that's cost effective, and that's created hundreds of thousands of jobs, then imagine what you can do in the lower 48, and imagine what you can do in Africa and India and China. And the thing is, those places are doing this. Solar has become so competitive and now produced in such volume that it's cost effective for the Chinese and the Indians and the Africans to consume it. So Africa, as an example, is leapfrogging the sort of dirty energy infrastructure altogether. I mean, they didn't have it. The 600 million people without power, you know, the grid of the sort we're used to, they're not going to build one. They're not going to do the central station thing with a coal plant and the radial grid serving a community. They're just going to jump to a distributed system of energy sort resources and sales, much like they jumped over the landline telephones. You know, they're just going straight from nothing to cell phones. And there's now hundreds of millions of cell phones in Africa.
Yeah,
so it's very exciting times.
Yes, and I wanted to thank Dave for sending that article, but even better for calling to call it to my attention and join our conversation today. Have a great Sunday, Dave.
All right.
Bye-bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Let me take a real short break, Danny, because I've got another call from Amtrak Tim. I have a sense I know what he might be talking about. We'll be right back with Danny Kennedy, Rooftop Revolution, How Solar Power Can Save Our Economy and Our Planet from Dirty Energy. Christy Weber, Landscapes Farm and Garden Center, says, have yourself a merry little sale. Starting now, all holiday items are 25% off, including fresh-cut Fraser fir Christmas trees and heavy handmade wreaths from North Carolina. This includes holiday commercial-grade LEDs. Happy to hear that Christmas is coming into the 21st century in a variety of colors and sizes, including the very cool and popular LED twig lights. And if you don't have your tree yet, they'll deliver your Christmas tree, bring it into your house, and set it up in the stand. And don't forget, mention the Mike Novak Show, and you'll get free delivery and free pickup after the season. Do you know what they'll do? They'll take down your tree, vacuum up the area, and haul it away for recycling. No need for you to lift a finger. Meanwhile, like Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center on Facebook for a new gift idea every day through the 24th. Today, it's the awesome mushroom garden kit. Grow your own oyster mushrooms and in as little as 10 days right in the box. Perfect for the foodie, the mad scientist, and the gardener in your life. Join the holiday fun at Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center, 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
You have to raise your head and go loo, 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 and look to the skies because it's Charlie Brown Christmas. We're talking to Danny Kennedy, Rooftop Revolution, how solar power can save our economy and our planet from dirty energy. We have just a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to bring in Amtrak. Tim, how you doing, Tim?
Doing pretty good. I just came back from a horrible carbon-producing job site I was working at down in Brazil. We actually ship crude oil, which is I'd rather not be doing work like that. I'd rather be doing a different type of work, but I have to keep myself employed. I wanted to weigh in on the idea of Germany and its solar power. And there's another part of its equation that a lot of people don't understand. It's called Temelin and Bukovany. Temelin and Bukovany are two large nuclear power plants or series of power plants that are in the Czech Republic. And what the Germans are having to do because of their trying to switch to alternative energy is they're importing millions, if not billions, of kilowatts of nuclear power from Czech to make up for the fact that the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine. And Czech is so excited about the German switch that they're getting ready to build two more nuclear reactors at Temelin to make up this German need because wind and solar don't work all the time. And concerning jobs, I also like to pipe up and let the speaker know if he has a solution for rare earth elements, because all these wind turbines and all these solar panels are going to be built in the People's Republic of China because we won't deal with our thorium issue with rare earth elements, which means that the rare earths required for the wind and the solar are going to come from the People's Republic. The People's Republic is restricting the export, which means to build those things, you have to build the plants in the People's Republic China, which is creating millions and millions of Chinese jobs in the People's Republic, not in the United States. There may be installation jobs in the U.S.
Okay, I'm going to, and Tim,
got to let him answer.
Okay, I'm going to, he's got about a minute to address all that stuff. Danny,
okay,
okay, thanks, Tim.
Yeah, and look, complicated, no question. We've inherited a dumb legacy system from the 19th century of boiling water to get electricity, whether it's with nuclear fuel or coal and gas, and transitioning off it ain't going to be easy. Like Lisa was saying, we're addicted to this stuff, and as long as you've walked into the woods when you're an alcoholic, you have to walk out. And I'm not saying it's going to take a century, but it's going to take years and decades to get to the true clean energy future. that there's jobs in it for Chinese people, I do not resent and I do not regret. There's also jobs in it for American people. We're proving that as an industry. Like I said, 120,000 strong. We grew 13% in job creation in the last 12 months. Name another industry in this country that added 13% of jobs over 100,000, and you can't. So we're part of the solution and part of the success, and I think people should just stop poo-pooing it and start getting with the program. This is an American invention that's going to save the world, uniquely positioned to take advantage of, because it's all about the ingenious combination of these solar panels with the rest of our infrastructure and our lifestyle.
And that's a good way to end it, Danny. The book is Rooftop Revolution, How Solar Power Can Save Our Economy and Our Planet from Dirty Energy. It's on my website, MikeNovak.net. Lovely talking
Rooftop
to you.
RooftopRevolutionBook.com. Just, if I could, RooftopRevolutionBook.com is just the direct
Microsoft. And that's on our Facebook page.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thank we'll you. Talk to you later. And Merry Christmas, Lisa.
And to you too, Mike.
And all I got to say is go green or...
Go home.